I can fly you out to Paris.
Okay.
Buy you some carrots.
What is up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of Mind of Manny. I did a couple of these episodes recently that people enjoyed, so I decided to keep going. So what I'll do is I'll just post on my Instagram or on my Facebook. Does anybody need to talk? Does anybody have questions? Does anybody have anything that they're going through that they would like to talk it out with somebody, get some advice or whatever? Not that I'm claiming to be some guru with all the answers, but I do care. And if any kind of wisdom that I've gleaned over the years can help somebody else, I'd love to help. And at the same time, you know, I think as brothers and sisters, we should be definitely willing to lend an ear and a heart to somebody who needs it. You know what I'm saying? So with that said, I have a couple of callers today that hopefully if you find yourself in the situation that they're in, or maybe you can glean off of something that they say or the situation that we converse about, that it'll be a blessing to you. You know what I'm saying? So this is what it's all about, right? To me, this is what it's all about. Like, I live to help people. So I'm going to be hitting up the first person right now. And yeah, let's see how this goes, y'all.
Hello. Hi.
What's up? It's Manny.
Hi, Manny. How are you?
I'm chilling. How are you?
Good.
Right on.
Ready for the day.
Okay. You having a good morning?
Yeah. So far, so good.
I love it. You can't complain, right? That's kind of how I feel.
Can't complain.
Thanks so much for joining. I really appreciate it.
Trip.
What'd you say?
This is a trip. This is by far the coolest thing that's ever happened to me.
Well, it's the coolest thing that's happened to me too. I think it's important to be able to, I like to break the fourth wall. You know what I'm saying? I always tell people, like, people get weirded out or surprised that I respond or comment or whatever, but I'm like, this is kind of what it's all about for me. Like, I really, really enjoy connecting and not being like a fan artist thing, but more like a family thing. So that's what I'm trying to create on everything that I do.
I get that vibe from your podcast. And to be honest, I was quite surprised when you were like, hey, do you want to ask your question on my podcast? I was like, sure. Like, I thought you were gonna send me a link to a previous podcast or someone else's podcast.
Nah, man, we doing it together. Okay. Right now, let's go.
I am down.
So your question was, and I'm gonna have you elaborate, your original question was, how can you communicate your expectations without sounding like you're nagging in the context of a relationship? So I'm going to need a little bit more details. And again, no, you know, no names, no whatever. You can make up names. You can call person X or Y so that way you can give me the nitty gritty and not be afraid of anybody knowing who the heck is talking.
Okay. So, like, on your previous podcast, you had a guest on there who was really upset about a relationship that had not gone anywhere or not gone where she thought it would go.
Right.
During COVID. And, you know, and she was saying that, you know, he, you know, wouldn't call or would just text, and then, or days ago, he wouldn't, you know, communicate at all. And, you know, and he would make up the excuse like, oh, you know, I'm sorry, I've just been busy with work.
Right.
I just had a lot of things to do. And, you know, and she came together, she said in response, like, well, you know, you do get a lunch, you know, you get a break in your day at some point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking, well, in my head, I'm like, that's not really nagging. That's more like, maybe she should have been more direct. If it were me, I would have been more direct. Like, well, I would have said, you know, I would appreciate if you called.
Right.
Like, or just texted, you know, that's what I like. That's what I tend to communicate my expectations. Like, I'm real direct. I'm not mean, but I'm real clear. And
right.
I make it known to guys from day one, like, I'm not the girl that you're going to have to guess what I'm feeling, or I want you to guess what I'm feeling. Like, no, I'll straight up tell you.
Right.
Like, I'm upset. Here's the reason why, whatever. And so, like, for instance, when I was in my previous relationship, you know, we had a conversation about, you know, sex and intimacy and what our boundaries were and whatnot. And he communicated to me that he would occasionally, like, and of course this is maybe like an extreme example, but he communicated to me like that he was partaking in or watching pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, well, I'm not okay with that, because that's not something that I participate in, and I don't want any part of it in my relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something that I'm down with. And then, you know, health was important to both of us. And so I said, you know, I found out in the relationship that he was, you know, smoking, and, you know, and he drank a lot of coffee and a lot of soda. And I just kind of said, you know, hey, you know, maybe, you know, I mean, if you want to drink your soda and your coffee, like, whatever, like, that's fine. It's not the healthiest thing, but that's your choice. But I'm really not okay with the smoking. Like, that just doesn't fly with me. You know, mm-hmm. that you can get cancer from that. You know, I want you to be around as long as possible. So, you know, please, you know, I know you've quit before. I'm sure you could quit again if you put your, you know, your mind to it or whatever. And so, to me, like, how do you, you know, where's the line between communicating what you want and it coming across as nagging?
Well, in that relationship, in your previous, is that why it ended? Those disagreements, or,
well,
or him?
No, it ended because there was a lot of distrust, and I found that he was lying about a few things. And so
he was lying about what?
With that. He was lying about a few things.
Okay.
So, and I communicated that I don't tolerate dishonesty. Like, once you lie to me, it's not that the relationship is necessarily over, but it's real hard to come back from that.
Okay. Now, did he complain of you nagging when you were telling him, you know, that he did?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Hmm.
He said, well, I just don't like when you nag me. And I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't think it was nagging. At least that wasn't my intention.
Well, okay, if you were honest with yourself, would you bring these things up on a frequent basis? Like, if you're straight up honest with yourself. Like, not what you would like to have acted like, but like how you actually acted. Was it a frequent thing that you would bring it up?
The smoking, yes. The porn, no.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I basically, yeah.
The porn thing isn't an extreme. It's probably like in 99% of relationships, because that's just where it's at right now. So you're, it's definitely not different there. Totally understand your expectations of it. Like, that's not a bad thing at all. The smoking, here's what it is. Were these things, not prominent, but were these things, obvious before you got into the relationship, or did you find out like while you're in a relationship?
No, I found out while we were.
So previously you didn't know he was smoking, you didn't know any of the other things.
Right, yeah, I didn't know any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Any of that.
I don't.
And the only reason, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, and I said the only reason I became aware of those things is because we had conversations around those things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we had conversations about sex and intimacy and, you know, what we wanted our relationship to look like in that department.
Well, that's good. How did you respond when you found out about those things?
I think I just got real quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say anything. I just got real quiet because I was hurt by it, because he didn't strike me as the type of guy that did those things. But I was kind of prepared for it because I knew that he had a history of addiction when he was in the military, which was 7 years before I met him.
Mm-hmm.
So his life looked very different. I didn't know him 7 years before. You know, I didn't know him when he was in his addiction. I didn't know him when he was in the military. I met him like years later, and he told me he's been seeing his sober for 7 years, and he was a professor, and he was very straight edged, and you know, and so I thought, oh, okay, well, he's really cleaned up his life, like, awesome, you know, and he attributed it to his relationship with God and his faith and all that, and I was like, awesome, that's great, you know. And so when he told me about the porn thing, I knew that his past was checkered. So I was like, okay, I'm not expecting anything in that department because that was then and this is now. Like, I'm not going to hold you against. And I was real clear with him. I'm like, I'm not going to hold anything against you that you did back then.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's between God and your past. I care about now and where we're at now. And so when he told me those things, I got real silent and I got emotional about it. Because I was sad. Because I've saved myself for myself. And, you know, I've been real careful about myself in that department because I want that part of my relationship to be beautiful and special. And so it felt like some of the speciality of it was taken away.
Okay, that's interesting. So you felt more so like when he admitted these things to you, that it was more of something that was done against you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, here's
because he was still watching.
He was still what?
He was still watching it.
Okay, here's the thing though. Like, would you consider any of your weaknesses or shortcomings something that is being done to him?
I'm going to sound like a snob, but no.
No, right? Because those are your weaknesses. Those are the things that you're dealing with. Those are your imperfections. You know, for whatever reason they happen. Look, if he's in the army and he was away at war or he's away from whatever, like, I can't imagine. I wouldn't know one person who wouldn't struggle with some type of something sexually when you're just away. Like, it's like, it's very, very, very difficult. I had a brother who went off to war. My father went off to war. And it's like, bro, you're away for like a year by yourself. Like, I don't even know how, like, that's difficult for a part of your psychology and anatomy that functions as if it's on its own. Like, it's not like we have to conjure up sexual feelings. It's kind of like, there, attraction is there. It's not like we have to make it up. The desire for intimacy, the desire for sexuality it's always there. So being away for that long or dealing or struggling with something like that, to me, becomes, I almost see it more as normal. And I'm not normalizing the act, but I'm saying the struggle with it, the desire, all those things to me are more human than it is for something to look at like, oh, this is something that's being done to you. If you're thrown in a situation like that and you have to figure out a way to maintain some type of sanity. Again, I've never been in that situation. So I can only imagine what are the thoughts, what are the emotions being by yourself. Like, I can't even imagine it, you know? So my first thought towards somebody like that is empathy. It's empathy because I'm like, bruh, if I walked your shoes, what would I be doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the first thought, instead of it looking like, and this is not about condoning actions. This is about loving people like we would want to be loved. So if you walked his road if you joined the military and you were away for a year, or if you were away for whatever, or you were always deployed or whatever it is, right? How, if mm-hmm. you took that on, how would you act? Because we'd all like to be like, oh, I would be holy. I would keep it. I would refrain. I wouldn't have sex. I would keep myself. We'd all like to say that. But we haven't walked those shoes. And the reason I get real slow to judge actions like that is because I'm like, until I am in a situation that this person has gone through, I cannot accurately, with the confidence in my voice, say, oh, this is how I would act. I can't do it.
Yeah.
I cannot do it, because I've seen myself lose my crap for things a lot less stressful than the army or than the military. Like, you know what I'm saying? One bad day of people being mean to me and I'm already like out of character. So I cannot imagine what it would be like to go through those certain things. Did he give you any type of reasoning or explanation for why he was smoking and why? Did he give any explanation?
No, I knew that he was an addict for many years after he got out of the military. He became addicted when he was injured in Iraq and they got him hooked on opioids at the hospital. And then that escalated. And so I knew he had an, like, I saw the addict tendency when we were together, because he was very committed to his work. Very overly committed. Everything he did, he had to do it 1,001%. There was no, like, you know, either I'm into it or I'm sort of into it. No, it was like, I'm either into it or I'm not.
Right.
Like, very polar. So I saw that real early. And I was like, okay, you know, a little hard to keep up with, but not a deal breaker.
Did you see it as negative, him being that focused?
No, not at first. It did concern me when we were talking about getting married and having a family, because I was like, you know, I know that your job is really important to you, and you know, and I get you love what you do, and I love what I do, and I don't want to take anything away from you in that area. But like, if we have kids, like, I don't want to be by myself every night, like doing bath time and story time and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want someone who's actually going to be there with me, you know, to do those things. And I'm sure if you will or not, because of, you know, I know how you are when you're at work. You lose all track of time, you know, and it's just, you get in the zone, which is fine right now because it's just the two of us and it doesn't bother me and I can entertain myself, but you know, I don't want to be a single mom who's not single.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that that part of it worries, like, what's this going to look like in the future? You know?
For sure. Look, I don't think any type of communication of what you desire within a relationship is considered nagging. The frequency of it can become nagging. And I think that's when you have to decide whether or not. Like, you have to go into things eyes wide open, right? So you saw certain things that were red flags to you. Now, again, in me explaining the before, I was trying to get you to maybe empathize, not agree, meaning like, if there are certain standards you want, there's certain standards you want. But it's important for us to look at each other. And this is for the health of your heart as you go forward and you're looking for a mate. It's important to maintain the humanity in all of us, meaning you have to step into each other's shoes and try to feel what the other person is feeling before you internalize and make it about you. Because our hurts and our pains, the things that he's going through, is not about you. That's going to be there before, that was there before you came, and it's going to be there after you leave, if you leave. This is about him. You know, the things that he's struggling with is about him. It's less a reflection about you. His past is based on all the trauma and all the things that he's dealt with in the past, right? So that's going to comprise the way he sees the world, the way he sees you. It's all going to be through a filter of the things that he's gone through. So
yeah,
when you're analyzing someone in that way, what you're trying to do is you're going to have to accept this person's broken parts and then decide on whether or not that is something that you can live with and not internalize and then turn it on them. You know what I'm saying? Like at some point, yes.
I like that. I'm not very good at it. It's weird.
You're not really good at what?
I said for my line of work, I work with families and children. And I'm great with them. Mm-hmm. I'm great with girls. But with guys, I'm not very good at getting empathy with guys.
Why? Why do you think that?
I think because I kind of go into relationship on protective mode.
Why do you think that? Why do you enter into protective mode? Was it a past relationship that hurt you too bad? Was it a bad relationship with men in your life before you even started having relationships?
Yeah, no, I saw a lot of bad examples of men when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
Men who were just abusive, unfaithful, treated their wives and children like crap.
Right. Okay, so now.
And I always.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I always told myself, I will never duplicate that in my relationship.
Right.
Never, ever. And I said, I will never put up with this or that or this or that. And, you know, I kind of like made a mental list. And so when I go to meet someone, yeah, I'm listening and I care, but a part of me is like, do I really care?
Right.
Am I taking into account this person's experiences?
Sure.
I want to say but not in the moment. Not in the moment. I have to have kind of like a reality check. Like, well, Jen, who are you looking for? Jesus? I'm like, I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. It's not bad to want your version of what you think the best person is. Like, I don't think it's bad per se. Like, you want morals, you want, you know, somebody who's worked through their shit. Like, you, that would be really great for you. And I agree fully. For me, it was somebody who was out of debt. It was somebody who, you know, loved God, who was honest, but at the same time, who had a lot of understanding. Like, it was important, you know? So I had my own, you know, quote unquote list, but I quickly started realizing that when I made that list, what ended up happening was I became way more of a moral high figure within that world of judging people against my list. And what I mean by that is somehow in the noble attempt to want the best person for me, I turned that into me looking down on everyone that I'm dating. Like, oh, you're not. And it just, I feel like naturally, instinctually just went that way. Went that way because as humans, and especially if you have any measure of faith or religion, any of that, it is very easy to look at other people and judge their actions as if we're coming from the holiest of places. It's really hard to see you on the same level as them. T.D. Jakes said this, and I've never forgotten it. He said, we have a lot of patience for people that struggle with the things that we struggle with, but no patience for people who struggle with things that we don't struggle with. Think about that. It's what you were essentially saying. You have no problem empathizing and having patience for women, but you have a lot of problems doing it for men. So there's an utter and complete bias. Now, again, I am not saying throw yourself into a situation that you feel unhappy about. What I am saying is how your perspective of people that are possibly going to be added to your life can really, really be affected by these types of biases. Because if you're okay with looking at somebody like that, then you have to be okay with them looking at you like that.
Oh, shit.
Them looking at your brokenness and being like, oh, nah, this chick got daddy issues. I'm out. You're not going to want somebody like that. You're going to want somebody to be like, but wait, stick around and try to understand my daddy issues. Like, I didn't want these issues. This is not something that I wanted. I didn't want to see bad men in my life. This is a situation that I got thrown in. So a little grace would be amazing. But if you don't extend that grace to people, why would it be like fair for you to expect it from other people? Do you know what I'm saying? Like that type of judgment. And again, this is not, please, anyone listening and you as well, I am not saying go be with somebody that's, you know, addicted to this, be understanding, be whatever. I'm not saying that at all. I am saying we do get to choose the, this is what I'm saying. You get to choose the broken person that you're going to be with. But everyone is broken. Everyone is broken in some way, shape, or form. We're all human. All of us are, in one way or another, trying to be better. Some of us get it right. Some of us get it wrong. Some of us care more getting it right. Other people have given up on themselves. You just get to choose your kind of broken. But there is no one that's not broken. So how you extend grace and empathy and understanding to that person is going to dictate whether that person extends the same thing to you. If you internalize his pain and make it about you, then if that person cares about you, he'd never tell you anything again. Why would he? If he cares about you and you take what he says about him personally, I ain't going to tell you nothing. Why am I going to tell you what I'm struggling with? Why am I going to tell you all my hurts and pains? If you're going to hear it and be like, well, I don't want somebody like that. I don't, you know. I've waited my whole life to keep it, you know, whatever. And now that messes, that steals from my ideal. That's not a safe place for anyone. A safe place for a guy in that regard would be like, if he tells you these things and you're like, man, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you deal with that stuff. From the little bit that I know you, I know this isn't like awesome for you. It's not like you woke up one morning and you were like, man, I'd love to have some vices in my life. I'd love to struggle with porn and cigarettes and, you know, opioids and, you know, because I wanted to go to war and I wanted to get hurt and I wanted to, you know what I'm saying? Like, essentially, that's how you're treating the situation. As if this person is choosing all these things. And now they're choosing to not get over it. And maybe I speak this way because I know a lot of people that came out of the military. And I know the things they, you know, this one friend that was really close that I call my brother, man. He sent me pictures of him in Saddam Hussein's mansion. And then when he was in Afghanistan holding a body with the head blown out. Like the head is literally, the top of the head is blown out. And he's holding the body, smiling in the picture. This is where he's at right now, to where he can hold a dead body with no top of the head and smile in a picture. This is where he is at. Obviously he chose to get into the army, but I don't know if that's the life that he chose. I don't think he was getting into the army more for the GI Bill, you know what I'm saying? Good benefits, you know, all that stuff. Not to ship his, but he was one of the softest people I know. He was not like gung ho, I'm gonna be a, you know, killer. He was a medic. And he wanted to be a PA and a doctor when he got out. And this is the situation he got thrown in. So when he came back, to say that he was emotionless was an understatement. He had no emotions. He had to turn them all off so that he can get through Afghanistan and not go insane. He had friends that died and got blown up by a 12-year-old suicide bomber. 12-year-old kid who played soccer with them all the time for like months. They would just play soccer together. And then one day, that same 12-year-old kid Came with some bombs strapped. Playing soccer, boom. So I say that not to make you sad, but I say that to be like, man,
no,
if somebody had to go through that, it's like, what if we had to go through that? What would we be like? And this is the one thing that allows me to understand people and have forgiveness. I always ask myself, what if I went through that? Like, what would I be like if I went through something like that? How would I act? Would I be hella holy, or would I be a freaking fragmented person acting out in all the vices? What would I be like?
I like that, what you said. I'm kind of marinating right now in my head and like processing it. And I think one thing that you said that like resonated with me is, you know, and it's weird, I heard my girlfriend say it too. She was like, son, you just gotta pick the broken one. Like, which broken one are you okay with? And I was like, okay. And I didn't understand what she meant by that at the time. I was like, what are you talking about? I don't understand what you mean by that. And now here in this context, I'm like, okay, I get what she was saying. And you're right. Like, I was not necessarily then, and I like a safe place to like share something with, because I did take it like as an attack on me.
Right.
But at the time, not what I thought.
Take it like, from somebody who's been married for over 10 years. Most of the crap that I think is my wife, 1,000% me. 1,000% me. Yeah, she has crap that she struggles with. Yeah, she could be a lot better in a lot of things. So can I. But 99.9% of the things that bother me about her, that bother me of what she does, bothers me because she's not me. Because she don't do things the way I would do things. Because I internalize. I make it about me. Well, I would do it this way. Oh, I would, man, if I had that opportunity, oh man, if I was in her, I would. I make it about me all the time. And I get frustrated that she's not more like me, or that she doesn't have the ethic that I have, or the this that I have. I make it about me. As opposed to appreciating and noticing and honoring and celebrating all the dope stuff that she is that isn't me. And I think about that all the time. Whenever I get to thinking, oh, you know, I'm so angry with my wife, or I'm so whatever, I'm like, bro, you're angry at yourself. Because you're putting these expectations on her that she didn't ask for. And if you had two yous in a relationship, two Mannies in a relationship, bruh, that would be chaos. It would be absolute chaos. So stop wishing that she was more like you, or stop viewing her through your lens, and start appreciating who she is. Love her for that. Because here's the thing. You can pick your best broken person. Meaning like they're the same work ethic as you. They have the same values, the same ideals. And in this current place right now, they seem to have their shit together. And then you get into a thing called marriage, which is forever. And then life happens that breaks you, that chips a little bit away at your character, that chips a little bit away at your faith, that chips. It's not like they're shiny and clean, bro. It's like a car. You buy it, awesome. But then you own it for 20 years. You're going to see some scratches. There's going to be some dings that weren't there before. You're going to have to fix the transmission when it gets to 100,000 miles. You're going to have to fix the lights because they're broken. You know what I'm saying? Like, life is going to do that to you. The more important thing is, as you're picking a mate, how do they handle stress? How do they handle disagreement? How do they mold? Are they so adamant about being right that they will offend and hurt anyone in their path just to be right? brokenness is going to come if it's not already there. It's the people who can mold, who can come back from it, who are willing to accept their brokenness and fight. And it may never go away, or it may show itself. It may come in waves. But their ethic is like, I want to fight more so, not so that I'll be ashamed of you. You won't be ashamed of me, but because I have a desire in me to be a better person. I have a desire in me to be able to look in the mirror at myself and be like, bro, you're giving it your all. Those are characteristics you should look for. Because that means whatever comes your way, whatever dents or scratches that life may bring, this person's going to have an attitude of like, all right, I'll take it on. I'll fight to be better. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I got what you're saying. I think I just got so focused on, you know, I kind of like, okay, where is your brokenness? Let me see it right now and see if I can deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I don't take into account the humanity of it. Like, where did this come from? Like, how did this get there?
Well, because that's the most important thing, right? You want to find out, why smoke?
Why is that?
Like, what? Why is the smoke? Why is the porn? Like, what is it that you're trying to fill? Because we're all trying to do it. Women struggle with porn almost as much as men do, and 9 times out of 10, it's things that you wouldn't even think it is.
It's not. It's like what 7-year-olds start watching porn at 7.
It's a different world. It's definitely a different world, and they're covering. You're making up for something else. It's not like, oh, I just want to be seedy. I'd love to deal with this. That's going to emotionally probably kill me. It's something else.
I didn't take into account that part of it because I've seen porn, just not just Laura, but really damaged a lot of my friends' narratives. And I was like, oh God, I don't want to read that story. Like, no, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't take into account, oh, this may not have anything to do with me. I just thought, well, it has everything to do with me if I'm with you.
No, 9 times out of 10, it has nothing to do with you. 9 times out of 10.
I didn't take that into account.
On the occasion, maybe it has something to do with you. Like there are situations where it's like, okay, a guy is looking at porn because it's like, the wife just doesn't want to, sex isn't interesting to her. So you got a couple options. You just kind of like shrivel up and try to kill a part of you that's not killable. I used to think, mm-hmm. you know, sex, you can just push it down. You can just pray it away. You can just, you know, the sex drive. That is not realistic. Or you go and you cheat. There's not a lot of options for a sexless marriage. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's not. And I find a lot of people pick the lesser of two evils. So that, you know, it's so complex. It's so nuanced, you know, and again, none of this is, I'm not giving excuses for people, nor am I telling everybody, deal with it. I'm not saying anything like that. You deal with what you want to deal with. What I'm saying is don't lose the humanity when you're dealing with relationships, and that's friendships, and that's normal love relationships, romantic relationships. Don't lose the humanity of it. Because you find yourself in a moral high ground because you're only seeing the things that other person is struggling with, and you're not even thinking about the things that you struggle with. If you're going to expect grace and mercy from God to cover all your weaknesses, you have to extend that same grace and mercy to the people that are in your life. You cannot demand it from God or expect it from God or from people. And you then, whenever it's convenient, don't give it back to the people that need it the most. And this is not saying that you have to have those people in your life. This is only saying change the way you perceive people, and maybe it will drastically determine who gets to be in your life and who doesn't. Because maybe that thing that you're being nitpicky about, and again, this is not me saying you specifically in this situation. I am not advocating for you staying with this person. I'm just saying maybe that one person that you would turn away because of something that you deem as not cool, that person was the person. And that person can overcome it because he has the character to fight against the things that are broken in him and the willingness. And you may miss it because the way you perceive life, love, and people is, oh, no. I can't get with that. This person is broken here. And I don't understand that brokenness. I think he should just be able to fix it. Get over it. It's not that hard. Come on, man. I used to think that all the time. All the time. Bro, it's not that hard. Just turn off the TV. Just do this. Just do that. Just go to the gym. Just stop smoking. But I'm making such a nuanced, complex trauma into like this easy black and white thing. Oh, just do this.
Okay.
It's a lot to process, I know. But I'm grateful for you calling. You know, hit me up on the DMs and let me know, you know, how it goes. And if you have any more questions, just hit me up. But I've obviously given you a whole lot to digest. So.
No, I think it's really wise what you said, because, I mean, that's one thing that I've noticed about myself is I'm really good at giving grace to friends and family. I'm terrible at giving grace to myself and the person I'm in a relationship with.
We all are. You are not alone.
Yeah.
We all do it.
So I set the bar like this for my fault. So you have to reach my bar. And right. If you don't reach my bar, then awesome. Like, right. But I don't take into account, like, okay, the chances of me meeting someone who is broken in a different way are probably pretty high.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. It's just the way it is. We're human. And I think I, somewhere along the line, took the humanity out of being in a romantic relationship because I was so set on, I'm not going to get hurt and I'm not going to deal with this.
Right.
And that's so I became like laser focused.
That's seemingly noble. Like, I think we would all do that. I don't want to deal with cheaters. I don't want to deal with these people. I don't want to deal with liars. Like, I don't think it's bad to think that. I think it's bad at some point where you become the moral high ground. Unaware or not even dealing with the fact that you have this wrong with you, this wrong with you, this wrong with you, this wrong with you.
Right.
And only you, the person who is doing the thing, will know where they're at. Sometimes it's moral and sometimes it's justified. Like, oh no, you cheated. Sorry, bro. I can't. That's not something that I really want to keep in my life. Or, you know, it didn't make sense why this person did it. Or the lying and the consistent lying. You can make a stand and be like, okay, this is not something that I want to accept into my life. Like, this isn't like me being morally higher than you. It's like, cool. If this is how you want to live, totally fine. I'm not judging you. It's just you can maybe do that with somebody else and I'm going to be over here. That's one way of looking at it. And then the other way is, oh my God, I can't believe you. I can't believe this guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then all of a sudden now it's a moral high ground. Like he's broken where I'm not broken. What a work, what a piece of whatever. And all of a sudden you have negative and it's like, ugh. And it's different.
Yeah.
It's different because you can excuse somebody from your life and be kind about it. All right, cool. Somebody else will probably love to deal with your brokenness and I just won't. And I have brokenness too. So no hard feelings. I'm just going to keep it moving and good luck. Hope you find love and you know, I'll keep it moving too. You know, that makes it a lot easier, a lot less trauma, a lot less like, oh, it's about me. It's about me. Nah, man. Accept people for who they are. They are broken. Cool. I don't want to deal with that kind of broken. I'll just say thank you so much for what I learned from you and keep it moving, you know?
Yeah.
But anyways, I appreciate you. I'm going to get to my second call. Thank you so much. I'll let you know when this airs.
Thank you.
Yes, no, and hit me up if you need anything at all.
Thank you. It was so nice meeting you and talking to you. You're great. I love your podcast. And Anne is awesome too. She's hilarious. And I love hearing you guys on your podcast, like talk and banter. It like, makes my day.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
All right. You too. I absolutely love those kind of situations where we can be honest with each other, be honest with ourselves. And hopefully that all makes sense, you guys. I am not in any way trying to tell you, deal with or put yourself in situations where you feel like you're with somebody that's making you less of a better version of you. Not what I'm saying at all. What I am saying is there's a way that we perceive people that can, in a negative way, put us acting as if we are perfect and not broken. And we have all the right in the world to cast judgment. I think we have all the right in the world to choose the trauma that we are going to deal with. But it's inaccurate and probably doing yourself a disservice to think that you don't have any trauma either. And then you're coming to this relationship all perfect and white, and the other person got some making up to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, that really, really will affect the way you interact in your relationships. So, here we go. I'm going to call the next person. Let's see what's up. I'm glad you guys are still here. And, yeah, here we go.
Hello.
What's up?
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I feel really nervous about this. I don't know why.
Wow.
I've never done anything like this before.
Oh my God, look at you doing things you've never done before. There is zero nerves. Here's the beauty of it all. Nobody knows who you are. Nobody knows anything. Right. You can literally say the most off-color stuff and no one's going to know. So I have zero fear. Anytime we're able to just talk about it and deal with it, I think it's important because we learn from each other. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So In your situation, this is what I remember. It says, I feel like I'm finally in a good place with myself, my marriage, and my kids, but I feel like so many people around me that I love and that I'm close with are struggling hard and going through it. How do you empathize with them, feel for them, and be there for them, but not carry their issues on yourself or bring it into your home or marriage? I'm struggling deep with this. That's pretty profound. Give me some details.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, it's taken a lot of time. I'm still working on myself. But I've come to a place within, you know, you kind of always set those goals for yourself. Once I get married, and you know, once I have my children, once I get a house, once I do this, once I do that, you know, life seems great, right? You know, you're working for those things. And I finally feel like, you know, within my marriage, within the kids, like we're all situated. It's like we can finally breathe, you know, like we've worked so hard for the things we have. You know, my husband and I have been, you know, working through our marriage and, you know, not that there's anything wrong, but, you know, just the regular everyday things. But we've finally come to a place where it's like, you know, like let's enjoy the fruits of our labor. We can finally relax. We can finally take a deep breath. But I feel like I'm so close to my family. I'm so close to my sister. I'm so close to my brothers. I'm so close to, you know, I have that really like Mexican, you know, heritage.
Totally.
We're just really close. There's not a weekend that goes, there's not a day that goes by that I don't speak to my family.
Yeah.
But you know, they all kind of seem to be in a place where they're hurting, they're struggling, you know, loss of jobs, you know, health issues, divorce, you know, even outside of my family, but really close friends of mine struggling with so many things. And, you know, if I'm being honest, I'm a fixer, you know, and my first, like, I like to be that person that people know they can count on and they can depend on. And, you know what, I don't know if I can be there financially, but you can pick up the phone and you can call me and I'll do whatever I can and I'll call whoever I have to call. And, you know, I want to fix things. I don't know how, but I want to fix things because they're my people. Mm-hmm. You know, when they hurt, I hurt. When they celebrate, I celebrate. When they're happy, I'm happy. And I know that can be a two-edged sword. You know, it's good to celebrate with people. It's good to mourn with people. It's good to, but I carry that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I lose sleep at night. You can tell me something and my wheels will be turning all day long, all night long, to where it has, you know, it's like I have a family member who is really struggling in her marriage and just going through it. And I was talking to my husband about it and, you know, just, I mean, really there's not much we can do with that, but support and pray. But, you know, it was like at a moment where he's like, well, come snuggle and come, you know, and it's like, did you not hear what I said? It's struggling. And you know what I mean? And it's like, okay, and I hear you, but that's not us, Erica. You know, that's not us. We mm-hmm. can't bring that into our marriage. And I get that. And I understand that. But, you know, it's just, you know what I mean? It's like, how do you feel for people? How do you have compassion, but still maintain that fine line and that balance of, I see you, I hear you, I feel you.
Right, right.
But, you know, it's like, what do you do?
I'm going to point something out that I always point out, because I'm really always about how we speak to ourselves and how we speak mm-hmm. to each other. Okay, so right now you said that your husband would say, but that's not us, Erica. And you say, I get that. I understand. And then you say, but.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go on to proceed to say, but I still take this on. So the reason I point that out is because that probably means you don't get it and you don't understand it. Because if you got it and understood it, then you wouldn't be bringing it in. Mm-hmm. And I point it out because when we say things like, I get it, I understand it, I know, these are things that we're trained and conditioned to do. Somebody comes with the correction or somebody comes with the whatever, and you said, I get it, but I know, but I understand, but the but immediately takes away whatever whatever you were saying before. The but literally negates it. So what you're essentially saying is you'd like to get it. You would love to understand it. But for whatever reason right now, you don't get it and you don't understand it because you keep bringing it into your life and into your marriage. So once you can accurately speak these things to yourself, then you can admit or acknowledge, okay, it started off as empathy. It started off as whatever. Now it may have moved into a God complex. And the only mm-hmm. reason I can say that is because I used to do the same thing. I used to take my parents' struggles and the way they were together, and I used to like put them on my shoulders and make them my responsibility. And it was like affecting me because I'm like, man, you know, right. I would take blame for some of it. And then I feel bad for my mom. I would just feel bad. It would just affect me. Until the mm-hmm. day that I realized, hey, these are grown people. This is a boy and a girl that decided to get together. And for whatever reason, they decided to be in this situation called marriage. This has zero to do with you, son. This is their trauma, their baggage, and they have to figure it out. Just like one day, you're going to have to figure it out. And it's going to be no one's response. I'm not going to be able to blame my mom. I'm not going to be able to blame other people for why my marriage ain't working. That's going to be on me. So there's something in you that is taking on these things. And I feel like it's noble. It's not like, you're not like, you know, it's much better than being like, oh, screw them. It would be so much better if they were like us. It's not like you're saying that. So it's like,
right.
It's great intention. It's great intention.
Right.
But
I had to
realize, oh, I think I'm trying to play Jesus. I think I'm trying to play God a little bit too much because I'm taking on the cares of people that, like you admitted, and like I had to admit, I cannot fix these things. The only thing I can do is pray. be there if they need me, be a loving ear, be a, if they ask for advice, don't just offer it. If they ask me, I will tell them what I think. If they don't take the advice, I will not get mad. I will not throw it in their face. I will not say I told you so. All things that I have done wrong, which I fully done it to my parents. I've done it to my brother. I've been like, oh, I told you not to do that. I, you know, and I get angry and I take all of their stuff on myself. But what is that? What that's doing is presuming that I know what the hell I'm talking about, that my crap don't stink, that I don't make mistakes, that I myself don't need God. I have the answers. That's how I approach those things, because I've had my stuff together where they do not have their stuff together. So there's a danger in which we put ourselves in a position where we're like, we know. And if they listen to us, if they only heard what we said, or if they whatever, then they would be better off. As opposed to being like, man, this is one thing that I just can't change, and my heart breaks, but I cannot fix this.
Yeah.
The only thing I can do, which your husband was right, is maintain my life, my situation. And it's not like void of how do you say, compassion. I'm definitely not saying that. But the most effective thing you can do is be the witness. And what that means is live out your life, handle your marriage, handle your life in such a way that it is a model for someone else to look at and be like, man, they don't even have to tell me anything. They're showing me how to make it work. They're showing me how to win in this area, how to win in this area. They're showing me. They're living it out. And that's what I've resorted to in my life. Like, babe, let's just live this thing out. If they want advice, I will give them my advice. If not, yeah, I'm keeping my mouth shut.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not so much where I'm just, you know, going around knocking on people's doors like, hey, what can I fix for you today? It's just, you know, it's not even necessarily things that people are coming to me with. It's more just like, man, it sucks. You know, like my heart breaks for them. My heart hurts for them. You know, it is coming from a place of compassion and just like, God, I wish there was something that I could do.
Right.
You know, I'm not so much trying to like, you know, like I know all, I see all, I be all. It's just more of like, you know, it hurts. You know, I want the people around me to succeed. I want to see them go far. I want to see them happy.
Can I ask you something?
That's
Did you ever learn from the struggles that you went through? Would you say you learn more from your struggles in low times, or do you feel like you learn more from your high times?
No, I know. Yes, 100%. I have struggled so much, and I think that's why it hurts so much.
So you would say that you learn more from those struggles, though, than like,
right?
Okay. So
100%.
So when I say we're playing God, is like when I say that, it's definitely not a diss to us. I'm going to say us because I do the same thing you do. It's not a diss to us, but it's us assuming or trying to take away or thinking that if they were in a different place, it would be better for them without bringing in the possibility of what if this is what they need. In my life, I had to lose everything. I had to lose my record deal. I had to lose fans. I had to lose no touring, no radio stations wanted to talk to me. Nobody wanted anything to do with me. Because I told God, hey, man, when I'm done with this thing, make it obvious. When I need to finish this music thing, make it obvious. Literally, everyone stopped talking to me. Magazines that I was on the cover of didn't want to talk to me. Radio stations that I went number one on didn't want to talk to me. Everybody closed their doors to me. And I felt so low, like, God, what did I do wrong? I was like checking my sin inventory. Like, what the hell did I do wrong? Did I do something that all these people are now holding against me? And it wasn't that. It's that God stripped all these things away from me, and it seemed like a really low point, but I needed it to then understand that the highest thing that I could become or that I could be is a son of God. There ain't going to be any type of thing that I do or accolade that I receive or none of that will ever bring me the amount of joy than this secure feeling of, oh, I'm God's. That's as awesome as it gets. If you're looking into a situation where it's like, oh, if they would just, again, we are playing God. As if they need to be in another situation. When I'm like looking at my own life and I'm like, what did God have to take away from me in order to get better? Because I 1000% learned all of my amazing life lessons in the darkest and worst places. I don't learn a lot of lessons when I'm riding high because I'm just riding high, enjoying life, kind of aloof to everything. You know what I'm saying? You ever notice you pray less when everything's great?
Get it.
You're just like, thank you, God.
And
you're just, but in those low points, in those low points, man, you're like, God, show me. Show me. I don't know if I would ever want people to get to not have low points or to not have hard times or struggles or whatever. And I don't think I would, I don't know if I would treat it like, oh man, I feel bad for them. To me, I'm like, yes, on a human level, I wish everything was perfect. I wish nobody had to deal with this stuff. I don't like it that people have to, I don't like any of that. But what is God? What is the universe? Depending on where your faith lies, what is life trying to show this person that they need to learn? Because there's no person that's going to go through this life without struggle or hard times. It's more importantly, like how do they act when they're in those hard times? How do they deal? If they're acting in positive ways, then it's like, bruh, this is a lesson that's going to take them through all of life. If they can figure out how to be grateful in this moment right now, man, they're going to be unstoppable. They're going to be invincible because life's going to hand them another bad deck of cards and they're going to approach it in a whole different perspective with flying colors. It's going to be amazing. So I almost feel like the thing needs to turn to gratitude. Your heart needs to turn to gratitude of like, man, they may have a hard time situation or whatever it is, but they're still kicking. They're still trying. They're still moving forward.
They're still here.
They're still here, man. And that's really all you can ask for. It's like the conversation should be like, you know, imagine how you would rock their world if you called them and said, I'm proud of you. And they're going to be like, for what? Because you're still going. You may not have one single answer for any of your problems, but you're still going when you could have left, when you could quit, when you could bail out. Mm-hmm. That option is available to you every single day, but you're still here and you're still trying. And I just want to say, I'm freaking proud of you.
I like that. I love that. Yeah.
It's going to change the way they view their situation. They're going to be like, wait, somebody's proud of me because my whole life is chaos and I don't know anything that's going on. Yeah. Yeah, I'm proud of you because guess what? All of us go through it, are in it, and don't know what the hell's going on. We're all just attempting to make right decisions. We won't know if they're right until like down the road. We don't know. Most of the time we look back and we'll be like, damn, shouldn't have made that decision. I probably shouldn't have done that.
Praise, that's a lot of those moments.
You know what I'm saying? Praise God that there's grace and there's enough stuff to cover that mistake. And I didn't get blown up about it. But if I was to be objective, I look like I'm doing good, but I made this mistake, this mistake, this mistake, this mistake. I just had enough grace or enough money or enough whatever to cover that mistake so that you will still think everything's okay over here. But nah.
Yeah.
There's nothing ever just okay. Like we're all working at it. We're all trying to be better. We're all trying to fix the broken. Right. We're all trying to do all these things. So let's do it together. And yes, I am proud of you. I'm glad.
Yeah.
You can learn from this. You can whatever. And then after that, it's up to them. They don't even have to receive your proudness or whatever it is that you're trying to inject into them. They don't have, that's on them. That's on them, and you hope that they will, but if they don't, they don't. And at that point, you have to be able to disconnect yourself and understand that their path is their path, and the same universe, the same God, the same energy, whatever it is you believe in that has kept you and that has brought you into a better place will be the same energy, God, universe that'll bring them into the place that they need to be if they choose to. If they do not,
yeah,
that is a life that they will choose for themselves. And I have sympathy and empathy for kids because they get in situations where they don't have choices. They don't choose the parents they have. They don't choose the, up until a certain point, they're not choosing anything. Everything's being chosen for them. So they're
That's the hardest part for me right now.
Yeah. They're dealing with things that they are not choosing. But when it comes to grownups, even if you have trauma, even if things were done to you and it sucks and it's, and it, and I hate it. I hate that things are done to people. I hate that they have all this trauma. But at some point when you turn into a grown-up, you have the decision of how you're going to handle that trauma and whether you're going to allow healing to take place or whether you're going to hold on to it and let it dictate and shape the rest of your life. You have that choice at a certain cognitive level where you can decipher between this is what happened to me. This is not who I am. I don't have to be the example of all these bad things. I don't. I have every right to be. I have every right to be upset at my abusers, at my attackers, at my enemies. I have every right on a human level to be angry with this. But I have every choice to be the opposite of what I should be. I have that choice as a person who has grown up and matured. So it's less about feeling bad and it's more about what choices are bringing you to where you're at. Because I used to feel like this. Anytime I see a homeless person, I still feel like this. I used to feel so bad, like, oh man, this sucks. But then I started thinking, what's their story? Like, I wonder what their story is.
Yeah.
You know, like what brought them there? What were the choices that they made? And not like in a, oh, you deserve to be there kind of way, but just like, just genuinely interested in the story of like, we all make choices that bring us to certain places. And we're all trying to figure it out. And it's way more empathy than judgment, you know? Yeah. Not saying that you're judgy. I'm not saying that at all. But I think I think it will help alleviate some of the personal burden that you're bringing on to yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
100, I'm like taking it all in. It truly does. This is something that I've, you know, I've dealt with and have, you know, really tried to work through, even like, you know, through a therapist and things like that, because, you know, it, like I said, it sucks, it hurts, you know, even with homeless people. The other day we passed by a guy, I had no money to give him. I always have a few dollars for that reason. And he was an old, old man. And I'm just like, man, I went home and my husband's like, you're still thinking about him, huh? I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, I think because I don't ever want to judge anybody's situation. You know, I told my husband before I met my husband, you know, that could have been me.
Yeah.
You know, the path that I was on, the life that I was living, the things that I went through, I feel like I've come so close to Hell's Gates plenty of times in my past that, you know, I'm thankful for where I'm at now. And I thank God for that. And so I just feel like when I see people at that low, you know, it's kind of like, how can I help?
Yeah.
You know?
And look, so I think I think it's beautiful. I don't think you should ever, I feel you should take that stuff in, let it affect you in a way that, if you can help, at any one of these scenarios, you help, but that you don't carry you don't carry the negative emotions that come
that's
with
the problem.
Yeah. Not being able to help or not being able to fix it. Because I think then at that point you transition from human who has compassion to I'm trying to play God.
Right.
We
know
what any of these people need. We don't know what brought them there. We don't know what choices they had that they could have changed it around. We don't know a lot of things. We don't want to be we don't want to have lack of compassion, because you are right. Like one wrong choice in my life and I would have been in prison. No doubt. I used to carry guns. I used to rob people. I used to whatever. And my friends who I did that with ended up in prison.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bruh, one bad choice, that would have been me. So I don't look at anyone in a bad situation and be like, your fault. I look at it like, man, okay, this can still be me.
Yeah, like you said, it's deeper. What's the story?
Yeah.
What happened?
How can I apply that to myself? Because we're still all bad decision away from something really dumb.
Yeah.
It's not like we've arrived to a place where we're like, everything's good. Cruise control.
We made it.
Yeah. It's like everyone is one bad decision away from doing something really stupid. And I think we let those lessons teach us and above all, continue to grow our compassion so that when we come against things in our life that ruffle our feathers, that we disagree about, or that it causes a negative emotion, that our response will initially be compassion as opposed to judgment, as opposed to some type of negative emotion that affects us negatively. We can quickly identify, that could be me. That could be me. And because of that, I'm going to extend this to this person. I'm going to extend grace. I'm going to extend hope. I'm going to extend compassion. I'm going to do that. And for your family members, trust me, because we deal with this too, you know, like in my whole entire family, me and my wife have it good, more so than anyone else. Not that anyone else has it necessarily bad, but I think everyone would be like, ideally, if we can tweak this and tweak this, we would be whatever. And you know what? Maybe that's not even accurate to say. Let me rephrase that. In our life right now, within our family, we are content. Can I answer the same thing for everyone in our family? I don't know. I'd have to personally ask them. But from the little bit that I do know, I'm not sure that everybody's fully content. And I don't think that means that we got it more together than them, because I don't want to put it on a comparative level. I maybe just want to say that we're closer to contentment, but still fractured, still working every day to become a better marriage. And looking at our family and being like, all of us are chasing the same thing. We're all on the same road. We're all trying to be healthy. We're all trying to love one another. We're all trying to hope for each other's situation to get better. But in that, we do also understand and pull back like, man, each situation is its own thing. And they each have to make all the decisions that's going to get them to the places that they want to go. And we can only dive in when they've invited us. And even at that point, we have zero responsibility for whether or not that situation will work or not. Because at the end of the day, it will always be up to them. Just like our situation will always be up to us. And there's something beautiful about that you can feel the compassion and you can want for things to get better and then immediately let it go and be like, but you know what, God, you're doing something. I can't feel bad about it. I can't feel negative, because when I was in that nasty situation that I was like, God, why the hell you got me here? This sucks. This is stupid. You know, after that situation, I was like, man, Jesus, I learned so much. Oh my gosh. You taught me so much. Thank you for that darkness. Thank you for that valley, man. I wouldn't have learned this any other way. I'm hard-headed. I'm stubborn. I need to learn these these hard things. And then it's like,
the hard lessons.
Other people need to learn this way too. Some people learn easy. I'm envious of those people. They can just watch other people and be like, oh no, I'm not going to do that. And then just not do
it.
Me, I'm like, I'm going to have to figure this out myself. I'm going to have to do it and have a scar. And then I'll know, don't do that, which is dumb.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's dumb, but
But other people, same way. Let them learn their lessons. Never judge them. Always be gracious. Always be there to answer the phone. Always be there to extend love. I don't think you should pay for other people's mistakes. I made a mistake of doing that too. When my family would come to me for money, and I would give them I gave them so much money, and then come to find out they're lying to me the whole time. Really affected not our marriage, because my wife was always gracious, but it affected my relationship with them, because it's like, bruh, now don't ask me for nothing. Don't even look my way.
Yeah.
Because it's not like I have unforgiveness, but it's like, no. I took too much on. And I shouldn't have. I should have been like, make your own way. Learn. Because your decisions brought you there. And I found out too late that their decisions were all bad and they were lying to me. And it made me really angry that I fixed a lot of their broken situations that I should have let them fall on their face. I should have let them fall on their face. And I think I aided them. I aided their process being a lot longer. Me and my parents.
Mm-hmm.
By having that emotion that we have, like, I feel bad, or if I could help, or da 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 da. I've done so many times with friends and family, and I've 1000% pushed their growth and their them dealing with themselves a lot farther down the road, because I thought I was being a savior, and it felt good to be in a position to help. And I found out, oh, I didn't help. I didn't help at all, because A, they didn't appreciate it. B, they didn't change. Learn. They didn't learn.
Yeah.
It eventually took them having to fall on their face, lose everything, just like me. Just like me.
Yeah.
So I honor you. I give honor and praise to the person that you would like to be, because I do think that within you there's like, this is coming from a pure place. It's not like you really think you're Jesus or you're trying to play God, but it's coming from a place where you're like, man, I care.
Yeah.
And it sucks to care sometimes. And it feels very unnatural for me to just let things go, because it maybe feels like inadvertently I'm not caring anymore. And it doesn't mean that. It's just, you recognize where you end and God begins. And that, my dear, is just wisdom. That's just freaking wisdom. It's like,
yeah,
bruh,
yeah.
I can't fix this, so I'm going to have to let it go.
Can't fix it.
I'm going to have to let it go, and I will not feel bad about it. I cannot feel bad about me winning and other people losing. I can't, because my winning came from all my losses.
Mm-hmm.
It came from all my losses, and I just decided to learn. I wanted to learn. I didn't want to repeat the same mistakes. I want to learn. Now I'm going to make new mistakes and I'm going to take new L's, but I've created a habit in my life that I'm going to learn from these things, and I'm going to be appreciative of them, and I'm going to be grateful for them. And that's going to kick into my life this this new way of an outcome. It's going to be different outcomes. When people struggle through things and they take a victim mentality or a negative mentality, their outcome is going to be birthed out of that. They're going to perpetuate a same negative or victim mentality and probably blame everybody else but themselves. But once you can recognize that you are responsible for the life that you're living to a degree, I don't think people who are still enslaved or people that are whatever, like there's a lot of children dealing with things that they didn't have. And some grownups even that are in situations that literally they cannot choose a way out of. So I am definitely not painting the broad stroke of that. There are extreme situations like slavery that is still happening today, so please don't hear me say that. But I'm saying in a normal situation where you do have a choice, most of the time your life is built up of those choices, and you have to let people learn from them choices. And at the same time, it doesn't mean that it's negative or you should feel bad for celebrating your good choices. You have to celebrate it, because what you're doing to the weak and to the insecure, they will think you're showing off.
Mm-hmm.
To those who are mature.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's more me. Yeah, it's more of a me thing. You know, like, these people aren't, you know, my siblings will share stuff that they're going through, and then I take that on. You know, it's not, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, totally.
It's just like, okay, I get off the phone and I'm like, oh my God. And then the wheels start going, and then the stress comes, and the anxiety comes, and the sleepless nights come, and I'm just, you know, they don't ask me for much. They don't, you know, it's not anything like that, but I totally hear what you're saying and I get it. And my therapist says, you know, it's just like all around confirmation, because, you know, she constantly will tell me, for God is my shepherd, I shall not want. Not Erica, Eric is not my shepherd, you know? And then she's like, you have, you know, I need to, it's good to have compassion. It's good to feel for people. It's good to not lose that. Yeah, I just, for some reason, I just carry it on. And
well, it's because you gotta call it what it is. You carry it on because it's masquerading as honorable. Because it started off that way. But then it transitions into idolatry. You know what I'm saying? It's you trying to play God. And it's not, I don't say that to be negative. It's this is the stuff that you have to tell yourself so that you stop, because it is what is happening. Yeah, you are trying to take the place of God. It is him who is promised that he will take care of his sheep. Him, not you. We can take care of sheep.
That we're
able to. So if your family needs some groceries, you can do that. If your family needs whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like if you're comfortable with doing it, you can physically provide for certain things. But then when you get to a part in the life where you're like, oh man, this is a problem that I do not have answers for. If you can't let it go, it's because something in you makes you feel like somehow you can do it. And at that point, it becomes pride. And you have to be able to call it out in yourself. Mm-hmm. Call it out. Don't let it masquerade as, oh, you're just, you know, you care. You're just being compassionate. Nah, fool. Right now, you're being prideful. I think I got answers that I don't. I'm trying to be more than what I am. Stop it. This is not cute. This is pride. This is pride, and it's not to beat yourself up. It's just that when you start speaking truth to yourself, you can know, oh, shut this part down. Because this part is trying to take God's place. This other part, this compassion, let's keep that alive. Let's keep that alive. But then let it transition into an understanding that I can't fix everything and I need to be able to let it go. I want this compassion to drive me to pray, not drive me to try to fix it. Because there's only one fixer.
You're right. Yeah.
If you could really fix stuff, you know, why is our own life so broken? Why are we continually, you know what I'm saying? Like we try to fix ourselves.
I'm not living a perfect life over here.
Exactly.
You know, it's a daily.
Exactly.
It's a struggle. You
it's
know,
like, it's just, worry about my own stuff. Let me try to fix my own stuff before I go tinkering in other people's lives. Just, look, this is how I talk to myself all the time. I'm like, bruh, stop fronting on yourself. You like to make it think it's noble. It ain't noble. You trying to somehow get your fix on being a fixer, because that's what you do. You know? You try to fix people and you can't even fix yourself. So just stop. Stop. Just give ideas.
I hear you loud and clear, Manny.
Yeah. But I'm so grateful that you decided to get on with me. I appreciate it so much. I know this will help a lot of people. So thank you for being brave. Thank you for being honest and vulnerable. I really, really appreciate it. And I'll keep you posted when I post this thing. And I know it'll help a lot of people. And this is a family thing.
I really hope so.
I hope more people feel the desire.
Yeah, this is a fine line.
For sure. I hope more people decide to call in and share their stories as well. So thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
I'll let you know when this airs. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right. Bye.
Man, y'all, I really hope you enjoyed these episodes. I had one guy hit me up and he's like, man, you should have more callers call in. And I'm like, bruh, I try. People don't want to call in, so I can't like make people call in. I'm grateful for the few people that have. But if you hear this, man, and you want to get involved, look, y'all, I'm trying to make this a family. This is a family affair. Let's talk about these things. I don't have all the answers, and I don't want to have all the answers. But I think when we bring things like this into the light, I really do feel that we help each other. Because something somebody else may say may make you think, man, I think the same way. I'm not alone in this. You know what I'm saying? So let's keep sharing these stories. Let's keep being brave enough to have these conversations, because I think they really are helping people. At least I hope that they are. So if you're enjoying this stuff, y'all, and if you're watching on YouTube or if you're listening on any of the podcast apps, man, I would appreciate a follow, a subscribe. If there's a bell, click that bell so you get notified every time that I'm posting something, especially if you're on YouTube, subscribe and hit the bell. If you're on Instagram, subscribe or follow me, hit the bell. There's a little bell in the upper right-hand corner you can see, and that'll let you know every time I post. And if you really are getting blessed by this and you feel like you want to help me out at all or sow into me, you can go to my Patreon. It's patreon.com/ManuelReyes. And $5, there's a $5 tier, and then there's a $10 tier for you to get the episodes earlier than everybody else. And then it goes all the way up to one-on-one coaching with me if you would like that. Totally up to you. But I appreciate anyone and everyone who wants to be a part of this. I love you guys, and we'll do more of these if you guys are into it. Hit me up in the DMs if you want to be a part of this, and I'll do another episode immediately. So I tend to like to have at least two or three guests on so that I can really converse with you, and we can really get to the bottom of a lot of these things. So if you want to get on one of these, hit me up. Let's have a conversation. I love you guys. Be easy. Ha ha ha.